Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live. Good afternoon, I'm Denise.
I'm Martin.
And you're listening to The Film Show here on Sheffield Live.
Hello!
Hello, hello!
And
we're in stereo, it's two of us.
Back together again, as Hall and Oates once put it, yes.
I have missed you, Martin.
I've missed you as well. Three long, terrible, tedious weeks the banter, the recriminations.
And the hate and the love hatred, yes. Of films together.
As I say, hate and love are two... emotions are so close in the way they express themselves.
What have you been up to?
I was in Southwold all last week on a sabbatical, just having a week away from everything, and it was very, very nice. The weather was amazing. It was tropical.
Oh, there, brilliant.
Some days. So, but
really? It's October?
Yeah, well, that was it. During daylight, when the sun was out, it was just, I'll show you some photos in a bit. You'll be surprised.
I'll believe you.
But I didn't go to the pictures at all. So I've been a bit...
So you're telling me you've got nothing for
the
schedule.
I've got nothing to say. I'm leaving it all over to you. You say, well, what do you think, Martin? And I'll just be boom.
I doubt that. I doubt that. We have been sharing a little bit of movie gossip, though, haven't we?
Yes.
We can't get onto trailer trash yet, can we? That's too soon.
No, but it's going to be really good this week, trailer trash.
Yeah, it's
really
good.
It's a great week.
In fact, looking
trash.
At the schedule, all we've put is trailer trash.
Trailer trash.
I did finish up with the London Film Festival, but because I was a little bit poorly last week.
You were.
I didn't go and see as much as I'd liked. By Sunday afternoon, I was feeling a bit better, and I went to see All We Imagine Is Light.
And was that any good?
It was, but I got the feeling it was better than I was feeling. So my head wasn't right in it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go and watch it again. And I wasn't well enough to go. I went home after that because I couldn't wait and see The Bird in the evening. So I missed out a little bit. So, but it's coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I must admit, I've got to, and I used to be like this, you know, a festival came along and I would have to go and see all these films a few weeks before, or at the festivals.
Yeah.
And then the succeeding 3 months, there would be nothing for me to go and see at the pictures because I'd seen it all.
Yes, I'm like that. So my friends, yeah.
And you've got to almost step back and say, do you need to see it now? The ones, I think, the ones you want to try and go and see are the ones that may not ever come out.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, they haven't got a release date.
They haven't got a release. You're not sure if they've got a distributor or anything. And, you know, there's been a number of films I've seen at festivals over the years. I've never heard of them since. And some of them have been cracking movies. So, it's a case when you're young like you, Denise, you still want to get up, crack of dawn, get into a cinema, not come out until midnight or something, exhausted, drunk.
Hey, I went to a film at midnight last night.
No.
I did. It was a piece of grindhouse schlock horror.
Oh, right. Perfect for the midlife movie scene. Eh?
Yeah. Have you heard of it? Pieces?
Is it the old Pieces?
It's a 35 minute. Do you know what the best thing about it was, though?
The end when it ended?
No, the half an hour before of trailers from the era.
Oh, now they're great.
So, like, and the adverts as well were all there, too. And because this film came out in 1983, something like that, but the trailers are from, like, there was one for Eraserhead from 1977, yeah. The Shining. I was like, the trailers were better than the film, I'll admit, but it was an experience.
I mean, I've got a couple of, like, DVDs which are just full of schlock trailers, some from the 60s, some from the 70s, and they're just fascinating viewing, you know. Yeah. And with a lot of them, you know, you've seen the best bits of every one of those films as well. You know, I don't need to go and see that now.
The Shining, was there any other? I don't know if there were other trailers of it, but it's just the view of the hallway when suddenly the blood effect comes rushing through. Just the trailer.
I can't remember much more than that. Mm. I went to see it when it first came out in the cinema.
Oh,
and
I bet
it was.
You did.
I did. You know me. Out my way. Me first. Because when it initially came out, I think in the States, there is a slightly longer version.
Mm.
And I think that's the one you can get on. You can get that on Blu-ray now. Just a bit more before they get to the Overlook and with Danny and that. And a couple of bits with Scatman Crothers. But the trailer itself, I mean, because no one knew what it was going to look like or anything, as normal, Kubrick had kept it all wrapped in secrecy. So, I mean, just that image was enough for you to
think. Apart from therapists all over.
trying to talk Shelley Duvall down.
You know. And anyone anywhere near the set, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Well,
you know Kubrick better than I do.
Do I? Yeah, well, you know I do.
I know.
Yeah.
But you're not going to tell us this week, are you?
I'll tell you another week.
Yeah. She's teased, isn't she?
I'll tell you now. That time, I was a
that
music...
didn't take much, did it?
I was a music... I've figured this out as well. I've upped the story. I was a music consultant on Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah. Technically, when I say music consultant, I mean I worked in a shop...
Our Price Records, remember that?
The Maltings in St Albans, and because it was like a bit of a posh area, you had a lot of classical music. So I'd come from a Luton shop to work in St Albans, and half of the side of the shop, I'm not joking, half the side of the shop, was quite a long shop, was all classical music CDs. And as a store assistant working in, the last thing you wanted was someone to come up with any classical music CDs, because they were filed in a number order rather than alpha order, like by the catalogue number, and they always got misfiled.
Yeah.
So this old fella comes up to the counter with a pile of CDs for radio. I'm estimating the the size. It's about, how tall is that? It's tall.
It's tall.
It's tall. It's a lot of CDs. And I was like, looking at this old, you want to avoid this kind of person that comes up, and this shuffly old fella comes up, and I'm like, oh, vaguely, I know this guy.
Straggly beard.
Yeah, a little bit of a beard.
Straggly hair, balding on the top.
Yeah.
Eating too many pies.
There were no pies. There were no pies, no food and drink in the shop. But yeah, so, and I knew it was him because I checked, he gave me a check with his name on it, Stanley Kubrick. I served Stanley Kubrick in a shop. So all this stuff about him never coming out was nonsense. He came shopping for CDs all the time.
Well, you know, people used to say, like, he'd be standing in Marks and Sparks sometimes while his wife was going around to get her and the kids some underwear and things like that. He led this sort of suburban home counties life.
Yeah.
Which, you can't get your head round.
Yeah, because, like, that's not Hollywood or London.
Yeah.
He's obviously a reclusive man. No.
But I don't think he was. You know, say you'd have Peter Sellers was a regular, Graham Stark and people like that. Well, how did all that happen?
Well, mostly because of the, like, because the Boreham Wood sort of area wasn't that far. We used to get people from the Bill and, like...
Don't say it so dismissively like that. We used to have people
I worked with a guy called Tony Power, who loved quoting one of the guys out of the Bill. And when he came in the shop one day, he was beside himself.
Yeah. And he died. But the Bill, I mean, the Bill is a great show because, you know, there is classic. Everyone in British cinema and TV appears in the Bill.
Well, you know, there was a time if you got a programme at the theatre and it was what they'd been in, they'd done the Bill, Casualty, EastEnders.
Yeah, the Bill was... Mm. I went to see something at the Old Vic many, many years ago when Kevin Spacey was the artistic director
those
there
days.
And they did The Iceman Cometh and he was playing the lead role, and then everyone else in it was a relatively famous face, and everyone else in it had been in the Bill from him. Wouldn't it have been great?
It's regular
just
work
for him to do one episode of the Bill.
Yeah,
that's what you need
while he was here.
Don't
think they needed that, though.
Not well. They wouldn't have been repeating that episode, would they, now?
We have got a bit of news as well, which I'm gonna hand over to you.
You've handed this one to me, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I've just basically shown him a picture and given him the bell.
Ooh,
I think you might know about this chap a bit more.
I know a little bit more about it, because we all have our own Tarzans, don't we? You know, if you're...
Perhaps not if you're under 40.
Well, that's not you, is it?
All right. All right. Bit of respect.
Yeah.
Ron Ealy.
Tell
me about Ron Ealy.
Ron Ealy was Tarzan in a television series. I think it ran for a couple of seasons, but looking back on it, it seemed to always be on. It must have been repeated time and time again.
Yeah.
And Ron Ealy was the TV Tarzan. And although they used to show Johnny Weissmuller and Gordon Scott movies at times, this was my Tarzan.
Mm.
And it had a great theme music. Da 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 da. Tarzan.
Wait, have we started track one already?
Stereophonic sound there. It was great. And it's strange because I haven't seen it turn up on these like myriad TV repeat shows that they seem to be on everywhere now. But let's hope, now he's died, they'll start showing it again. He didn't really do much else, did Ron?
No.
Appeared in a couple of films, but Tarzan was his high point. And he had a very small loincloth, from what I remember.
Oh, really?
So maybe that's not why they show it nowadays. It's a little too much information, as they say.
Well, another Tarzan has left us.
Yes.
But with us, what a segue. With us this week, we've been getting very excited about three whole trailers for Trailer Trash.
Yeah. I wasn't excited about the first one.
I like the first one. The first one looks like a fun action nonsense. It's called Love Hurts. And it's the first film from Ke Huy Quan since his Oscar-winning... Performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once. I know him better as the lad from the Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom and the Goonies.
Of course, yeah.
But it also stars Ariana DeBose, who was so good in West Side Story. Sort of the only thing I really liked in West Side Story, if I'm honest. He plays a realtor, which I think is just an estate agent.
Estate agent, yeah.
realtor sounds
sexier, like, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. And he's obviously the trailer just looks like an excuse for a lot of high action kung fu type fighting in new properties and a bit of comedy. Looks fun, like it.
Yeah, it says it's from the producers of Nobody, which, and it looks exactly like Nobody, you know. Office drone turns out to be a, you know, martial arts expert, gets loaded up with lots of lethal weaponry, and mayhem ensues.
Yeah, I think his brother is a gang lord, and he's got out of the thing, get out of that world, and he gets back. Just when he thought he was out, he gets dragged back in. But it looks like it could be fun.
But then we've told you the entire film there now. If you watch the trailer, you'll pretty much see the entire film. So
that was the thing about the trailers in this film, though. It was like half an hour's worth of trailers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
the 10 minutes you get now.
And it's half an hour well spent as well,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was great, yeah. Next one.
Next one now. This might be my trailer of the year.
Yeah,
even.
It is good.
And if you remember a few weeks back, I was going off alarming about the trailer for Speak No Evil, which gave away the entire purpose of the story, the entire shock horror moment. They just chucked it in the trailer. Well, you've heard us babbling, I would say, about The Brutalist for months now.
Brady Corbett's,
yes. The trailer has been, in the words of Boris Johnson, unleashed.
What do you have to bring Boris Johnson into it for? I was having lovely thoughts. Come on.
This trailer is incredible.
It is, and it's so
brief. A minute and a half.
It's just a sniff of some good quality stuff that you've got to...
It chucks all these images at you, and there's this great piece of music playing, which I'm assuming is from the score of it. And there are some images that are just, oh, I want to see that now.
Yeah.
There's a bit with just that woman in the red dress jiving. Oh. And it looks incredible. And then it's gone.
Upside down Statue of Liberty.
There's these glimpses of these wondrous architectural structures. And I don't know, it just looks...
Well, of course, it won Brady Corbett got the Best Director prize from the Silver Lion, isn't it, for
Venice.
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to say Cannes then, but it wasn't Cannes. And it was the favourite to win with critics, wasn't it? So I'm really looking forward to that. I think it comes out towards the end of December, beginning of January, maybe. Yeah.
What a Christmas present that's going to be. All I can say is it also proudly states on the trailer that this film is going to be presented in VistaVision. Oh, I cannot wait.
We're going to have a
lovely It's just
Christmas.
Going to be...
I hope it's out by Christmas.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because it's 4 hours long, but there is an intermission.
Yes. Oh, lovely. I love an intermission. I'll order me drinks now. Right. Final trailer trash. And did this trailer really actually make you emotional?
I was sobbing tears by the end of this.
Amazing.
It is.
It Maria. We're talking Maria. About Maria, which is the new Angela Jolie film where she stars as opera singer Maria Callas. Directed by Pablo Larraín.
Yep.
Now, Angelina Jolie looks stunning in this, doesn't she?
She normally does, but she's outstunned herself, I think, in this one.
And I mean, like, not just looks stunning, but, like, her delivery. You hear a few killer lines in the trailer.
Even in the trailer, there's two catchphrases.
we've already got our memes. Yeah. You might put this on your gravestone, might you?
There's this line she comes out with
in the trailer.
Because
someone says, is the piano in the right place?
To which she replies, it's not right, but I'm nice. And I'm going to have that on my gravestone. Because that, it pretty much sums up my entire life, that things have never been right. But I'm nice.
Yeah. There you go. But also she has another line where she says, my life is opera. There is no reason in opera.
Well, that pretty much sums you up as well, doesn't it? That's you to a T.
It looks fabulous, though. Yeah, all very excited about that one.
Lots of lovely tracking shots of her walking down these exquisite boulevards.
In gorgeous clothes. Yeah. With, yeah, stylish people
everywhere. I mean,
towards the
end,
everywhere.
I couldn't see it too well. My eyes were full of tears.
Shall I start with the music?
Have we done? We've wrapped
oh,
everything up.
Oh, I think
up.
We've got all of our... That's oh our three God. Trailers. We're 20 minutes in and we haven't heard a thing.
Out.
Yeah.
Hit it.
So I have selected a playlist this week and I'm going to play some tracks from Thomas Truax. Thomas Truax released an album in 2009 called Songs from the Films of David Lynch. I will talk a little bit more about it later. Hang on. Let's just play the first track.
Yourself be hurt this time. Don't let yourself be hurt this time. Don't let yourself be hurt this time. Don't let yourself be hurt this time. Then I saw your face. Then I saw your yourself be hurt this time, then your kiss so soft, then your touch so warm, the stars still shine bright.
To the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and that was Thomas Truax there.
Perky.
With Falling from Twin Peaks.
Very perky version.
Yes. Not like the original by Miss Julie Cruz.
Julie Cruz,
who I was fortunate enough to bump into in the Virgin Megastore when the record came out. And she signed the copy of the record, which I'd won in a competition, which was a shout-out, easy question, and no one else in there knew it, so I got it. And she was very nice to me.
Was she?
Yeah, she said, now go away, I'm busy.
See you again. Did he give you a kiss then?
No.
I do stalk you, Martin.
I'll match your Kubrick and raise you a cruise.
Hey, but the thing is, Kubrick came to visit me in a shop. You went to visit her in a shop. So I think
I was a Virgin and Hour price. You know, which one comes out better? I was in a mega store, St. Albans Hour price. Yeah.
So we'd normally do a feature now, but I thought because we've been away for a couple of weeks, we might just have a catch up on what we've been watching that we might have missed for reviews. And I thought I'd start by talking about The Crime Is Mine. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't, but I'm going to.
It's still on at the Curzon, isn't it?
This week, yes.
Because it's not on anywhere else.
Now you've told me that Isabelle is in it.
Oh, Isabelle Huppert. So it's a 30s comedy crime caper. I really enjoyed it. It's lush to look at.
Mm.
I don't know that I'm familiar with the director's other films. What else has he done?
It's François Ozon. He chucks out a film a year.
I know, but which ones? Do I need to look it up?
Yeah, my mind goes a blank there because there are so many.
I said I'd talk about it. Anyway, look, it's a crime comedy caper, but it's almost like Chicago meets like a Me Too fantasy version of the 30s. So these two young women are on the uppers. They're behind with the rent. One of them's a failing actress who's just been had a horrible sofa moment, audition moment with a director that she's got away from. And the other one's like a lawyer that can't get any cases. And they realise basically that they can take advantage of her being one, the actress being misaccused of this murder of a producer. It's good fun. It's really good fun. And just when it gets a little bit samey, Isabelle Huppert turns up as this fading actress who hasn't made it from the silence to talkies. There's loads of references to films. It is just really good fun. Really good fun. And I enjoyed it. I think you're going to go and see it this week, aren't you?
I am. Because my mind just went a blank there with François Ozon, which is
shorting
it. Because it's just, it's nearly a film every year he comes out with such stuff. As France, that was one of his recent very popular ones. Jeune et Jolie.
Jeune et Jolie.
Swimming Pool. Do you remember that one?
No.
That was great.
And no.
5x2. And of course, my favourite Christmas film of all time, 8 Women.
Why is that a Christmas film?
Because it's set at Christmas, there's a Christmas tree in the hallway, and all they do is talk about Christmas.
Okay, I'll add that to my December viewing list then.
Yeah, please do.
I've been tree? Also, because I was a bit poorly,
Are you all right now?
I'm all right now, yeah.
You don't seem it.
creepy. But also, because I was steeling myself with celluloid screens, because I'm not really a horror fan, but I had a bit of fear of missing out of going to festivals, because I haven't been to one really this year, so I was like, I'm going to go to that one, it's next door. But actually, it's been quite good fun because there's a lot of humour in the films that they've put on so far.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But I've also been at home retreating into the sofa and comfort. And with the sad death of Maggie Smith the other week, all four have got Private Function and The Missionary on, the streaming Channel 4.
Yeah.
And I watched Private Function the other night, and I don't think I'd watched it since the 80s.
I think last time I saw that was when I saw it in the pictures.
It was such fun.
And I said the other week, then I'd seen The Missionary, and it was just, why have I not watched this?
I watched The Beiderbecke Affair, which I never watched at the time.
Was that with James Bolam?
Yeah. That was really good fun. And what else? Oh, yeah, because I've got Netflix now, I've watched a sitcom called Girls 5 Ever. So it's executive produced by Tina Fey. It's very much in the style of 30 Rock, but it's like a band, a girl band called Girls 5 Ever, who get back together accidentally like 20 years later. And it's just a really funny 30 minutes, 25 minutes even.
I used to love 30 Rock. Well, I mean, I still love it now. I've got the box set.
It's the the same sort of vibe as that. Yeah. And it's looking at sexism in the industry and being a 40-something woman, but it's very funny and lots of pop culture reference. But the good thing is it comes from a place of love for that kind of music. So whereas I watched The Franchise, and The Franchise is, it's okay, but it's Armando Iannucci writing, but it's directed by someone unusual. It's directed by Sam Mendes.
Yeah. Has it Marina Hyde contributed to the script probably, for this as well?
Probably.
Well, she tells everyone about it in a column. There's a, can you get back to writing about
well, there's the a joke. There's a joke in it, actually, about... Because it's all set in, like, a Marvel universe.
Yeah.
But it's sort of saying how this is too corporate. And but we all know, we all kind of know this. But they're on the set of a film, and it's like the poor relation of the whole of them. They're coming to the end of their cycle of power. And so it's all sort of being produced... sort of being controlled by money men who don't really care about the product, shock horror. But it's sort of made in a, it's a little bit sneery about it. It doesn't come from a place of, I really like comic books.
Yeah.
So it's not terrible. It is worth having a look because there's some really good people like Lolly Adefapo's in it. She's really funny. Richard E. Grant has a whale of a time as a pithy actor on the set.
Yeah.
And there are funny moments in it, but it's not bang, bang, laugh, laugh. It's a little bit too cynical, maybe.
Yeah. I understand what you mean. You think it's where they've almost, I think it's an easy target.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Not and as exactly. you say, you've got to show it some respect, haven't you?
Mm.
Otherwise, it gets a bit, what's the word? Schneid. Yeah. Today's word is schneid.
But I didn't mention Time Stalker. So I briefly mentioned it on the show when I was on my own and played a lovely track from it as well, Alice Lowe's film. I really enjoyed it. I think it will be streaming quite soon. It's well worth a look. But that, I mean... I don't know, what else have we been... Oh, you've been watching something else, though.
Yeah, well, I...
think you're quite different.
Yeah, I sort of... Purely through chance, I was in my local Oxfam shop the other week, and they had this 6-DVD box set of BBC documentary series that was made in the early 1960s about the First World War, called The Great War. It's narrated by Michael Redgrave, and there's Ralph Richardson and Emlyn Williams doing other voices in it, but he's the main narration in it. So it's over 26 episodes covering 1914 to 1918. And so structurally, it's quite similar to what the World at War is. And you see the World at War. The World at War is on all the time.
Yeah, that's Laurence Olivier.
Which is... And it's still a marvellous
narration. Yeah.
And I haven't seen this series for years. I think it was repeated some time back. But I think this was before Freeview and all that. And this is just extraordinary.
And it's the kind of thing that BBC will pop on iPlayer from time to time as
Yeah,
well.
And I mean, I haven't seen it around for ages. So this was 15 quid, but I thought... No, I'm not going to give this a miss. And I started watching it about 2 weeks ago. And the real thing that really sort of hits you hard in it is they're actually talking to veterans of the war in this, who are giving you their personal experiences of what it was like to fight in the trenches with women, what it was like to be on the home front or to be working as a nurse. And, of course, there are Germans, there are French people being interviewed. And they're still, like, reasonably young. It's just about 1964. Mm. So, you know, they're in their sort of 60s and 70s still. And I always find the First World War very, very emotional for me.
At school, we... So in the whatever decade I was at school in, but we did Up the Line to Death, so the war poets of the First World War. So it was always like it was on the curriculum for kids in the 80s, 90s. So the First World War is it's a really like you say you have an emotional reaction to it, but it is just the thought of what really happened.
Yeah.
And the industrialisation of war, and you go there.
There's so much of that that you see, and you know this extraordinary thing of like tens, hundreds of thousands of young men signing up to go into this meat grinder which is pretty much all it turned out to be.
I remember being fascinated by the First World War as a result of probably studying the poems at school. And then it probably was part of why I'm a little bit more left-wing than, say, my parents are, because Alan Bleasdale did a version of the Monocle Mutineer on the BBC. It's also why I fell in love with Paul McGann, if we're honest. And that was a really interesting show. Did you? You must have seen
I remember it, yeah.
Because it was fictionalised, but about a real person.
Yeah.
And it was the front pages of all the tabloids were in uproar, weren't they, about it?
And, and that was the example of that happening with the British Army, with the French Army. They almost entirely downed their arms at one point. And it's... We just seem to think that the First World War was British soldiers in trenches fighting Germans. Yeah, and it was like an awful lot more than that. And I also get fascinated by what the Russian front was like in the First World War. Literally millions of men floundering around, you know, again being churned up by these huge cannons. And so I'm about halfway through, but as I said to you, I do about one episode and I find it's quite challenging. And almost like I want to sit down and consider what I've just sat and watched. But it's marvellous and it really should be back. Well, iPlayer would be a perfect place for it, I think.
I think because now BBC4 doesn't sort of produce any sort of new stuff in the same way.
Yeah.
Does mean that they're at least getting some old stuff out of the archives.
And you don't know whether there's some copyright thing with these things now. But it's extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. So, and all you're seeing is newsreel footage, photographs, contemporary maps and that. And the way that is given life and vitality, it's the way they used to make a documentary like that.
I'm interested to see that. Right, should we do another song?
Go on then.
About time, innit? This was originally by David Bowie, and it featured in the film Lost Highway. Here we go.
Funny how secrets travel. I'd start to believe if I were to bleed. Thin skies, the man chains his hands held high. Cruise me blonde, cruise me babe. A blonde belief. Beyond, 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 beyond. No return, no return.
You are listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, online and on digital. That was Mr. Thomas Troax with his version of I'm Deranged, which featured in the David Lynch film Lost Highway, performed by David Bowie, from his 1995 Outside album originally. Thomas Troax is... I've lived in Sheffield about, I don't know, 25 years now, and I've been seeing Thomas Troax in Sheffield for about 20 plus years. Have you ever seen him live?
I haven't, no.
He's quite an experience. Yeah. He travels with a band, but his band is instruments that he's invented. So Sister Spinster, is like a spoke wheel with spoons and things that plays like a drum kit. He has a hornicator, which is a big gramophone speaker.
I'm glad you're explaining that to me.
All sorts of, and he plays lots of lovely guitars. He is a wonder to watch live. And if you want to watch him live, he's playing at the Dorothy Pax next Thursday, the 7th of November. Oh, and I'm going to go and see him.
I might go along then.
Yeah. Well, it's like the venues I've seen him in is the Grapes upstairs, no longer a venue. The Boardwalk, no longer a venue. The Harley, when it used to do more music.
He's like the kiss of death to Sheffield music venues.
The Greystones is still going.
Just.
And he played there a lot recently. And this would be the first time he's played at the Dorothy Pax. Excited, yeah.
Okay, you might be able to tempt me to go along to see that then.
Tempted. We're going to do some reviews now.
Some reviews, yeah. Well, I'll kick off because I ended
Don't
up...
Don't kick off, Martin. Neither of us needs to kick off.
Sorry. What was that one, that phrase I used last week you picked up? Back in business. So you go, oh, that's a good one. She's just making this show like a load of catchphrases. It's not right, but I'm nice. Anyway.
Sorry.
Well, I'm going to talk about... I managed to... By the time I got home yesterday after a four-hour train journey from Norwich, which was...
The horror.
I managed to catch something on streaming, and I saw Woman of the Hour, a new film starring and directed by Anna Kendrick, an actress I've never particularly warmed to in the past.
I mean, she might not have been in your kind of thing.
No. Yeah. There were some films she was in with Blake Lively a few years ago, and it was like having teeth pulled for me. But I thought, well, it's an hour and a half. How much of a chore can this be? So I settled in to watch this. And it's the story. It's based on a very true story of a serial killer who was killing women in, looks like mostly the California region, during the 1970s. And he was eventually arrested and sent to prison for the murder of seven women, although police think he could have murdered at least 130 women and young girls. Now, the big thing about the film is showing how police authorities just didn't take seriously women who reported incidents where they'd actually survived with him. And even when he was called in for question, more often than not, he was released the next day. So the way Kendrick has put this together, and I'm going to say she's done a fantastic job with this, because this is a great little movie. She's created this film where it's sort of, it's set around her, who's playing a young, actually probably not so young actress, trying to get her way into TV and films, appearing on The Dating Game, which is the American version of Blind Date, where this guy is one of the three contestants. Mm. So there's that story going on. And then around it, there are various flashbacks of where women have been assaulted. Some of them have been murdered. Some of them have, one way or another, got away from it. And I found it's just this tight little film that... It's always like taking you by surprise as well.
Yeah.
And it's visually very inventive. And there was a couple of moments in it, which there's one moment in it, which it was like a like a punch to the stomach to me, where she's in the studio and the makeup women were touching up her hair, and they're talking about the questions that she asks, and one of the makeup women says, well, you know, it's the always the same question behind every question that you're asking. And Kendrick goes, well, what's that? And the woman replies, well, I pick one who isn't going to hurt me.
Yeah, which one's going to hurt me?
God. And you really, as a man, you don't pick up on all how that thing is just embedded in society.
I have to say.
That was a real sort of,
I have, I always get a little bit, another real crime drama, or another man who murdered and raped women. This is such a good film for me, from the women's perspective. It's not about him.
Yeah.
It's about what he's done and what hasn't happened, and who and these women not being listened to or cared about. Like the way she's treated on the TV show, she's just a piece of meat coming in.
Yep.
She's not expected to have her own opinion or ideas. You know, they criticise her for her looks and her hair and what she's wearing. You know, there's the opening scene when she's auditioning and the guys are talking about her as if she's not even in the room.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's a bit plain. I think she's a bit this, or I think she's a bit ugly. You know, and that is just like pieces of meat.
Yeah.
And the extreme of that is men will treat you like a piece of meat and murder you and kill you.
And I liked how that Eric the film didn't want to explain him.
It doesn't want to explore him.
Because why?
No.
I don't want to know about this.
It's this, looking,
you know, I don't need this explained to me if you went through a trauma. No.
I'm always a bit wary of that kind of thing, especially when sort of someone like David Tennant is playing, you know, a famous... I don't want to touch it. She does such a good... What an amazing job Anna Kendrick does on this. She stars in it. I think she co-wrote it as well as directed it.
She wrote something called Ian McDonald, because I was looking at that. Yeah. But,
so she must have produced it, though, right? She must have got a producing credit.
If you're directing a film, you're always contributing to... And if it's a man who's written the script, there'll be some things which will need a woman's perspective in a film like this, which I'm sure she is.
A little bit of fictionalisation in it, obviously, and there's a little bit of fantasy in terms of the. So there's the character that I don't think with this really happened, but the character that comes to the TV screening and recognises him as someone that. Yeah. Must have attacked her friend who died a few years earlier. Because the flashbacks sort of, and flash forwards, go around about a 10-year period, don't they? And they're just beautifully, and it's weird to say beautiful, but tenderly, and they're all from the perspective of the women.
And she draws everything in, because sometimes you think, well, what's this about? Where was it, you know? And, you know, so she puts all this in little over an hour and a half.
Mm.
That is tight, economical, lucid filmmaking, you know?
And can I just say as well, if we compare, let's compare and contrast. When Anna Kendrick had the opportunity to put something and make her directorial debut, she makes a sensitive, intelligent, compelling film like this. Not like The Pool Man. Chris... I'm still bitter about the 20 minutes I spent trying to watch The Pool Man.
I think, didn't I say to you, I went about 10 minutes longer than you, didn't I, on The Pool Man? And it's not made my life any better. If you want, just look at the trailer for Pool Man and you'll see.
So we're both rating, I think.
Oh, I'm giving it a tremendous rate, and I shall...
The woman of the hour.
I shall reconsider my opinion of Anna Kendrick, because I can do that.
Good. Did it get a cinematic release?
I don't think
it just went straight to Netflix. Yeah. That's a real shame. Netflix. God, what do they think?
Well, it means that we get to see it, and it didn't cost us anything.
Well...
It's always that.
I'd rather go to the pictures. I went to see The Room Next Door yesterday. I took a break from Celluloid Screams and I went to The Room Next Door, the new Almodovar film, first English-speaking film, which I was a little bit trepidatious about because I just love the Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think some of the especially there's a bit of a clumsy exposition scene in this where I was like, oh, I'd forgive this if it was in Spanish because I wouldn't really know how clunky that dialogue was. So Ingrid and Martha play, so it's Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton. Tilda Swinton is an ex-war correspondent. Julianne Moore is a successful writer. They used to be friends in the 80s. They've lost touch. She happens to turn up at a book signing in New York, and a mutual friend says, I'm going to visit her in the hospital. Do you know about the cancer? And it turns out they get their friendship back together. Tilda Swinton's character comes to lean on Julianne Moore as someone that she wants to help her see the end of her life. Mm. She knows that the treatment's not going to work. It's a really sensitively done. I really liked it. I really liked it a lot. And I wouldn't have expected that everyone knows someone doesn't know that they've lost a terminal illness or some form of cancer or have, you know, been treated for cancer. It's done in the way that you would expect Almodovar to, because he's always had a bit of an obsession about health, but this is actually coming full on and saying, this body is dying.
Yeah.
And it's sort of valuing that end of life. It's a really intelligent film, but it doesn't bang you over the head with it. And it's quite joyful as well, I think. The beautiful colour palette is there.
Yeah.
The gorgeous kitchens are still a feature. But I really liked it, and I found it not over emotional. Mm. It more made me think about people that I'd lost and being in control of your own destiny. Very good.
So you're rating that?
I'm giving it a rate, yeah. It might not be for everyone, but it's for me.
Okay.
Shall I play another track?
Yes.
Yeah. This has had quite a long life, this track.
Was Thomas Truax there with
Baby Please Don't Go?
Baby Please Don't Go.
That's had such a long life. Started off as like a traditional folk kind of bluesy rhythm.
Didn't
and blues.
Van Morrison and Them have a this big is, hit with it,
so
wasn't it?
So Them was the track that featured in Wild at Heart in 1990, hence the David Lynch connection. But it's got like a really big 30s blues tradition. It was big Joe Williams in the 30s. Mm-hmm. 50s, it had a D-wop phase. It's done everything. Jazz, blues, Afro-Caribbean. being 60s, and then 60s rock.
There you go.
And in 2009, Thomas Truax did.
With his hornicator.
Yes, he's got a hornicator and he knows how to use it.
Right, so we were going to talk a bit about what's happening next in the week ahead.
We have a lovely friend of the show, Mel Gawley, who is an independent filmmaker, film enthusiast and horror film fan. So she's coming in next week to give us a little bit of a roundup of her favourites from Celluloid Screams, but also trailing her own FFS Festival, which is a female-centred film direction. If it's about female film screenings, yes.
Then that's okay.
So her festival, One Day Festival, which is out in a few next month, has just gone on sale. Today at 4 o'clock, I am going to see, as part of Celluloid Screams, one of your favourite films, Blood and Black Lace.
Yes.
It's a 4K restoration.
Blood and Black Lace. Mm. Some people say it's the film that kicked off the giallo genre.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Some people will complain about that, yeah. But I'm quite happy to go. It's marvellous, and it's a brand new print, isn't it?
It's a 4K restoration.
Believe me, it's going to look amazing.
I'm really excited.
And then...
what are you doing? Where are you taking me after that?
After that? Well, I'm not taking you to see Blood and Black Lace. You're going to have to do that on your own, Sam. Yeah, I think we're going to see the Tinder Sticks tonight, aren't we?
And who are we meeting in the pub beforehand?
We're meeting Claire Denis. I rang her and I said, Claire, you remember me in Paris? You were sitting in front of me? I told you, move your head.
Yeah. Tell you what, if she don't show up now...
She said to me, dog and partridge, 7:30, pint of Guinness. So if anyone wants to join us with Claire Denis... In the Dog and Partridge.
We'll see you there.
We'll see you there.
Film releases. The Heretic is out on Thursday, because it's Halloween on Thursday.
Yes.
Mr. Hugh Grant being very bad.
As you've never seen him before.
Bad Hugh.
Bad Hugh.
Anora is out.
Anora, and that's I'm looking forward to that.
Amelia Perez continues this week.
If I could find where it's on anywhere, yes.
And Alien is on at the Light, but there's only a few screenings of it. If you haven't seen Alien by now, I mean, gosh, give it a go.
I think the Curzon on Halloween night. I've got they've got a Nightmare on Elm Street and the original Suspiria.
Oh, I might go and see that. Oh, I'm working. Darn it. Right, okay, I'm going to leave you with a Thomas Truax track, with what we've got left of it. This is, Blue Velvet, originally Bobby Vinton in Blue Velvet. Anything else to say before we go, Martin?
Enjoy your films.
Oh, yeah, enjoy your films.
Than satin was the light from the stars.